All right, so with that, let's go and pray and ask the Lord to bless our time. We're going to cover two very interesting chapters in Daniel, filled with vision and prophecy of latter days, which will kind of dovetail into our study of the book of Revelation on Sunday mornings. And so let's go and pray, ask the Lord to give us understanding, not just an intellectual understanding, but a spiritual understanding into these visions. Okay, so let's go and pray. Well, I just want to thank you for this time together. Ask your blessing over the teaching of the word, that we would understand these visions and dreams that Daniel had so many years ago, and how you used a man like him, Lord, that was just sold out for you, set apart for you to interpret these visions and dreams and to record them so that we can use them even to understand things that are future from us. And so may you just anoint each person that's logged into the live stream. May you anoint their minds, Lord, so they would understand. But then also, would you anoint their hearts so that they would be changed by the teaching of the word, Lord? I pray that, Lord, just a word, a specific word, would go out to each one that's tuned in tonight. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, so Daniel chapters 7 and 8. Now, before we get into chapters 7 and 8, what I'm going to do, just to let you know, is that we're going to read through the beginning parts of these chapters rather quickly, because the interpretation is actually given toward the end of these chapters, okay? So all the data, the dreams and visions that Daniel has, it's recorded in the early parts, but then the actual interpretation by these angels, Gabriel, one of them, is given at the end. So we're going to be kind of moving quite quickly through the beginning parts of the chapter, and then toward the end, we'll focus on the interpretation of the dreams and how that dovetails into the latter day prophecies, even in Revelation. Now, it should connect up if you've been coming to our live stream or logging into our live stream on our study on Sunday mornings. We've been studying verse by verse, chapter by chapter in the book of Revelation. And so we just covered the first four verses of Revelation 20 this past Sunday, the millennial kingdom. And so a lot of that is fulfillment of prophecy that's even given right here in these visions in chapter 7 and 8, especially at the end of the tribulation period, which we covered a couple weeks ago as we finished up Revelation chapter 19. And okay, so you're going to see how all this connects, hopefully, after tonight, especially the dream in and the vision in chapter 7 of Daniel. It really does speak of the latter part of the tribulation period when Antichrist comes on the scene. Okay, so very interesting chapters. Before we actually get into our text this evening, though, I want to just mention to you, you know how we covered chapters 5 and 6 last week, and we noted this, that chapters 5 and 6 are historical chapters, and they take us historically through the end of the Babylonian Empire, where Daniel ministered there in Babylon, but then also takes us into the beginning of the Medo-Persian Empire in chapter 6. And they're historical in that they record Daniel's ministry in these two different kingdoms. And you know, I want to draw to your attention the end of chapter 1 as well, which is also historical. Remember when Daniel and his three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, were their Babylonian names. But remember Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, Daniel's three friends, they were all taken captive there in 605 BC under Nebuchadnezzar. But remember, we noted this in chapter 1. It was a test of their character, and they passed the test. They didn't defile themselves with the pagan ways there and even the pagan food. And then God would raise them up to be very prominent in the workings of the government areas of Babylon there. And so now I want to draw this these verses to you at the end of chapter 1, just to kind of set the course of how Daniel and his friends are used throughout the Babylonian Empire, even though it's a pagan land, and even though they're not supposed to be there, they're exiled there, but then God raises them up because they're set apart and they set in their minds and their hearts not to defile themselves with the pagan deities of Babylon. They stayed true, and as they stayed true to the Lord, that God protected them, gave them gifts, and then used them for a long, long time. And so we're reading that in chapters 6 and 7 last week, and then we're going to see how in chapters 5 and 6 last week, and then chapters 7 and 8, we're going to see the prophecy that's going to go on out through the Babylonian Empire, but then in chapters 9 and 10 next week, we're going to see how the prophecies, they continued, his interpretation of the prophecies that continued into the Medo-Persian Empire. But let me just read this again to you. I always like to kind of go back to these verses here in Daniel. It kind of just tells of the character that he and his friends had and how God gave them so many gifts that stood the test of time. And so from Daniel chapter 1, verse 17, I'm going to read. It says, "As for these four young men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams." So we're going to see that in our chapters 7 and 8 tonight. Verse 18 says, "Now at the end of the days, when the king," this would be Nebuchadnezzar, "had said that they should be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar." Verse 19, chapter 1. "And then the king interviewed them, and among them all, none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore, they served before the king." Okay, so this is in a pagan land and before a pagan king that Nebuchadnezzar realized that God had his hand on them. And so Nebuchadnezzar was ministered to by them. Now, verse 20, it says, "And in all matters of wisdom and understanding about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers who were in all his realm." Verse 21, "Thus Daniel continued until the first year of King Cyrus." Now, we've been studying the historical accounts 5 and 6 last week as the Babylonian Empire fell to the Medo-Persian Empire, to Cyrus there. And we see Daniel, he's continuing on. And he's probably in his 70s at that point. So in chapter 1, he's a teenage boy, about 17 years old. And he's in his 70s when we got to the end of chapter 6 last week. And so we see that the gifts and the call, they stood the test of time as Daniel just remained faithful and God really used him. Okay, so that's really the backdrop that we see. Now, when we now turn to chapter 7. When we see chapter 7 now, I want to just remind you that that is not in chronological order. Remember, we looked at the historical accounts in chapters 5 and 6, how Babylon fell. And so in chapter 6 was the account there. Remember when he's cast into the den of lions there? And so he's ministering after Babylon fell to King Darius there, which many think is kind of a title for Cyrus. We don't know for sure, but all that to say is that the Medo-Persian Empire is the world empire in chapter 6, and he's ministering there. But then notice in chapter 7, this is not in chronological order. Chapter 7, verse 1 says, "In the first year of Belshazzar." Okay, so that's about... it says in the first year of Belshazzar, that's before chapter 5 when we see Babylon fell. Remember Belshazzar, he saw the writing on the wall. And so chapter 7 is even before chapter 5. And then notice in chapter 8, when we get there in verse 1 tonight, it says in the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar. So both chapters 7 and 8 are before chapter 5 that we covered last week. Okay, so all that to say is the historical accounts are in 5 and 6, and then 7 and 8, and all the way to the end of Daniel now, they're going to be just a list of dreams and visions that are sprinkled throughout the historical reigns of Belshazzar, and then also Cyrus the king as the world empires, they change from the Babylonian Empire to the Medo-Persian Empire. Because I want you to note that. Okay, so chapter 7, we're actually going pre-chapter 5, right before Babylon fell. Okay, so chapter 7, verse 1. Interesting vision on these four beasts. Okay, it says, "In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head while on his bed. And then he wrote down the dream, telling the main facts." Verse 2, "Daniel spoke, saying, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea." Verse 3, "And four great beasts came up from the sea, each different from the other." Verse 4, "The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. I watched till its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and a man's heart was given to it." Verse 5, "And suddenly another beast, the second like a bear, it was raised up on one side and had 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth. And they said thus to it, arise, devour much flesh. And after this," verse 6, "I looked and there was another like a leopard, another beast, like a leopard, of which had on its back four wings of a bird. The beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. Verse 7, after this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. And I was considering the horns, and there was another horn, a little one, coming up among them, before whom three of the first horns were plucked out of by its roots. And there in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking pompous words. Verse 9, I watched till thrones were put in place, and the Ancient of Days was seated. His garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head was like pure wool. His throne was a fiery flame, its wheels a burning fire. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. 1,000 thousands ministered to him. 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court was seated, and the books were opened. Verse 11, and I watched then because of the sound of the pompous words which the horn was speaking. I watched till the beast was slain, and its body destroyed, and given to the burning flame. As for the rest of the beasts, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. And I was watching in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man, coming with the clouds of heaven. He came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. Verse 14, and then to him was given dominion and glory, and a kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom the one which shall not be destroyed. Now, from verse 15 on, we're going to see the vision that Daniel had. It's going to be interpreted, okay? And so we're going to see that in verses 15 all the way to the end, verse 28 of Daniel chapter 7. Now, I want to just kind of draw this and put this together to you as we read the interpretation. Okay, so this vision of these four different beasts, they're four different world empires. And you remember Daniel chapter 2, the vision that Nebuchadnezzar, actually the dream that Nebuchadnezzar had, and only Daniel can interpret the dream. That's a parallel vision to this vision in chapter 7. Chapter 7 and chapter 2 of Daniel, they're parallel visions. Now, Nebuchadnezzar had the dream, right? And then Daniel interpreted the dream. On this one, Daniel has the vision, right? And it's Daniel that he's going to receive the interpretation in verse 15, it says, I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit within my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. I came near to one of those who stood by and asked him the truth of all this. And so he told me and made known to me the interpretation of these things. Now, this one is probably an angel. Now, we're going to see in Daniel chapter 8, the angel Gabriel is the one that gives him the interpretation of that dream in chapter 8. But this one doesn't spell out Gabriel, but it probably is an angel that gives him the interpretation. Okay, so I want to note that in Nebuchadnezzar's dream, that great statue, it spoke of four different world empires as well. That was a dream that Nebuchadnezzar had, and Daniel had the interpretation of the dream and the vision that was given in the dream. Now here, Daniel has the vision, but it's an angel that gives him the interpretation. But these are parallel visions and dreams, and they're speaking about the same thing. Okay, so I want to note that these four beasts, they represent four different world empires. Okay, so the first one, when it says the first was like a lion and had eagle's wings, verse 4, that's the Babylonian Empire. And then it says the second like a bear, right? And it was raised up on one side and had three ribs. That's the Medo-Persian Empire. And that's going to be spelled out in the interpretation. But I'm drawing this to your attention to kind of remember back in Daniel chapter 2. Remember, the head of gold was the Babylonian Empire. That was the empire ruled by Nebuchadnezzar. But remember, the chest of silver, that was the Medo-Persian Empire. Okay, so you can go back and read that vision, and you're going to see these different empires. They're going to be kind of they're going to be matching up as we read through these beasts here. Okay, so notice it says in verse 6, after this I looked, and there was another like a leopard. And this is would be the Grecian Empire, and it had four heads. Those would be the four generals that took over after Alexander the Great died. And then notice this in verse 7 says, after this, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. Now, remember in Nebuchadnezzar's dream, remember the Roman Empire was the fourth empire, but then remember the legs of bronze that of the Roman Empire? Remember, it kind of went into the feet, which were partial clay and partial of iron there. And so, remember the Roman Empire, it became a revived Roman Empire with 10 toes. And so, this last beast, which is exceedingly vicious in Daniel's vision in chapter 7, right? It's the Roman Empire as well, but it's the Roman Empire that becomes a revived Roman Empire and has these 10 horns. Okay, so I'm giving you kind of a summation of the interpretation because I want you to kind of think back with me in Daniel chapter 2 and see that parallel vision and dream there. And so now in verse 15, this angel, this one that came near to Daniel that stood by him, is going to give Daniel the interpretation. Okay, so these are all interpretations of things that will come to pass in the latter days. Okay, so it gives an account of all the world empires, but then it leads us to that one last world empire, which is controlled by Antichrist. Okay, all right, verse 15. It says, I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit, within my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. I came near to one of those who stood by and asked him the truth of all this. And so he told me and made known to me the interpretation of these things. Okay, so here's the interpretation. Those great beasts, which are four kings, which arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. Okay, so he starts to explain that these four beasts are four kingdoms. But then notice it says, verse 18, but the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. And so at the end of these four world empires is going to be an eternal kingdom and an eternal empire, which is run by the Most High. And so remember the vision or the dream that Nebuchadnezzar had. Remember this rock, not big, this stone, this great, great big stone came out and it smashed that image there, that statue, right at its feet. And remember the interpretation was this, is that as the Roman Empire became a revived Roman Empire, perhaps run by 10 different kings. Now, that's just something that is interpreted. We don't know that for sure, but the Roman Empire never was conquered by another world empire. It just kind of dismantled from within. And you can see the residue of the Roman Empire even now in Western Europe there. And so many think that there's going to be a revived Roman Empire coming out of Europe there. And then perhaps the 10 toes are the 10 kings. It's partly iron, partly clay. There's a confederacy of nations there that are going to be run. And so it's during that time that this stone not made with hands comes and crashes right at the feet there. So the interpretation is during the time of that last empire, perhaps the revived Roman Empire, that's when Jesus Christ is going to come and he's going to take out all the different world empires, right? And then remember when that rock hits, it expanded into an eternal kingdom. And that's what we believe perhaps is the millennial kingdom, the thousand-year rule and reign of Jesus Christ. And so if you've been coming to our Revelation study, You'll know that in Revelation chapter 20 is the record of the millennial kingdom. And so what preceded that is judgment upon what? This earth. And so this earth is purged of sin and then the return of Christ. And so remember spiritual Babylon in Revelation 17, and then we have economic Babylon or physical Babylon in Revelation 18. That gives the details on how the earth and how this world would be judged. All the kingdoms of this earth will be judged, and then the Lord will return. And so this really kind of does match these visions here, not only in Daniel chapter 2, but also right here in Daniel chapter 7, when it says in verse 18, "But the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever." This is after these four great beasts, these four great world empires are judged. Okay, so verse 19 says, "Then I wished to know the truth about the fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful with its teeth of iron and its nails of bronze, which devoured, broke in pieces, and trampled the residue with its feet." Now, verse 20, "And the 10 horns that were on its head, and the other horn which came up before which three fell, namely that horn which had eyes and a mouth which spoke pompous words, whose appearance was greater than his fellows." Now, this is really interesting. Daniel's giving us some details into Antichrist's empire. Now, we've noted this in our study of Revelation. Remember Revelation, the dragon, the reference to the dragon, the great dragon, and the dragon is what? Satan. Remember he comes and he has seven heads, and on his seven heads are seven crowns. They're diadems, right? They're the crown of kings. And so the interpretation right there was that there are seven kingdoms that's identified. And so you have like Egypt, hopefully I remember all this, Egypt, you have the after Egypt you have the Assyrian Empire, then you have the Babylonian Empire, then you have the Medo-Persian Empire, and then you have the Grecian Empire, and then you have the Roman Empire, and then you have this Antichrist Empire, this revived Roman Empire, the seven heads. And so remember there when Antichrist comes on the scene, the beast out of the sea in Revelation 13. Remember, we see that the crowns, they're now on the 10 horns. Okay, so we notice that, remember, even the dragon had horns too, but then when we see the description of Antichrist, the beast out of the sea in Revelation 13, the crowns go from the seven heads to the 10 horns. And so it's interesting when you read right here the description, this fourth beast. If this is the Roman Empire that becomes the revived Roman Empire, notice 10 horns come up, right? It says, "And the 10 horns," verse 20, "that were on its head, and the other horn which came up, before which three fell, namely that horn which had eyes and a mouth, which spoke pompous words, whose appearance was greater than his fellows." What I believe Daniel's describing here is that there's 10 kings that are going to come out of this revived empire, perhaps the revived Roman Empire, but then one's going to come up, which is Antichrist, and he's going to take out three of the kings. And perhaps, or probably, it's because three kings are going to rebel against him. They're not going to agree with what he's doing, right? And so these 10 kings, they're supposed to pledge their allegiance to Antichrist, but perhaps these three, they rebel, and they're not with fully what Antichrist wants to do, so Antichrist will take them out. Okay, so that's the description here. But when you read Revelation 13, the beast out of the sea, and then you also have the beast out of the earth, which is the false prophet in Revelation 13. But the beast out of the sea, he has 10 horns. Now we see that these 10 horns, they become seven because three are devoured. And this little horn that devours them is Antichrist. Okay, so verse 21 says, "I was watching, and the same horn was making war against the saints and prevailing against them." Now, when you study the tribulation, that's what's happening. Remember, Antichrist, he comes as one of peace in the first 3.5 years of the tribulation. But remember, at the abomination of desolation, as spoken of in Daniel chapter 9, which we're going to get to next week, remember, Antichrist is going to come and want to be worshipped as God. He's going to go into the temple, in the wing of the temple, and he says, "I'm God, worship me." That's middle of the tribulation. That's 3.5 years into the tribulation, which begins the great tribulation. He's going to turn on Israel, and then he's going to try to take out Israel again. We've noted this in our study of Revelation. And so in verse 21, when it says, I was watching, and the same horn, Antichrist, was making war against the saints and prevailing against them. I believe this is Antichrist, a description, trying to take out Israel specifically again, but anybody that doesn't take the mark of the beast, okay? Now, verse 22, until the Ancient of Days came and a judgment was made in favor of the saints of the Most High, and the time for the saints to possess the kingdom. So this is describing when Jesus comes again, that Antichrist is going to prevail until Jesus comes. Now, we just studied Jesus comes again in Revelation 19 at the Battle of Armageddon. Remember, he thwarts that last rebellion there. And then he's going to set up his millennial kingdom there. But remember, we noted also in our study just this past Sunday morning, that right when the tribulation ends, Jesus returns, and right before the millennial kingdom begins, there's a 75-day interval, which we're going to get to in Daniel chapter 12, and we actually cross-reference there in our Sunday morning message. Daniel chapter 12, the last couple verses there, it highlights a 75-day interval between the end of the tribulation and the beginning of the millennial kingdom. And remember, we noted this on Sunday. One of the things, or a few of the things that are going to happen there during that 7-day interval is that Antichrist and the false prophet are going to be cast into Gehenna, and then Satan's going to be bound for 1,000 years in the bottomless pit. And then also the temple, the abomination, desolation, the desecration of the temple and the tribulation temple, that's going to be all cleaned up. And so judgment of the nations as well. We noted this, that the Old Testament saints will receive their resurrected bodies during that 75-day interval. And then also the tribulation saints, Revelation 20, verse 4. So there's a lot that's going to happen as the 7-year tribulation ends and the millennial kingdom begins. But right here in verse 21, it kind of speaks, it points out to that transition. 21 and 22 says, I was watching, and the same horn was making war against the saints and prevailing against them until the return of Christ, until the Ancient of the Days came and a judgment was made in favor of the saints of the Most High, and the time for the saints to possess the kingdom. Okay, so verse 23, thus he said, the fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom on earth, which shall be different from all other kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, trample it and break it in pieces. The 10 horns are 10 kings. See, Daniel spells it out. So it helps us to interpret the vision that John has in Revelation. The 10 horns are 10 kings who shall arise from this kingdom. So these 10 kings, they arise from the kingdom of Antichrist. But Antichrist is going to devour 3 because they rebel against him. And another shall rise after them. He shall be different from the first ones and shall subdue 3 kings. This would be Antichrist. He's going to subdue 3 of the horns, 3 of the kings. Now verse 25, he shall speak pompous words against the Most High, shall persecute the saints of the Most High, and shall intend to change times and law. Then the saints shall be given into his hand for a time and times and half a time. Now, time, times, and half a time is 3.5 years. Okay, a time is 1 year, times is 2 years, and a half a time is half a year. And so this would be what? 3.5 years, the last 3.5 years of the 7-year tribulation period, which is known as the Great Tribulation. During this time, Antichrist is going to be in charge, and he's going to try to take out everyone that doesn't take his mark, that doesn't pledge allegiance to him, okay? And so many are going to be beheaded for their faith, right? There are going to be some that are preserved, that will live on into the millennial kingdom, but many are going to be persecuted and killed for their faith. And this is going to be for 3.5 years of time, times, and half a time. So you can see Daniel 7, the vision that Daniel has, this interpretation fills in a lot of detail of Revelation that we've been studying. Okay, now verse 26 says, but the court shall be seated, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and destroy it forever. and then the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people, the saints of the Most High. This is the millennial kingdom, right? This is when the church is going to return with Christ to rule and reign. And as I mentioned, the Old Testament saints and the tribulation saints, they'll receive their resurrected body in that 75-day interval right before the millennial starts. And they're going to rule and reign this thousand-year reign of Christ with him. But then those that survive the tribulation, don't take the mark of the beast, the 144,000, the 12,000 from every tribe, that's Revelation chapter 7, right? And other ones too that survived the tribulation, they'll live on into the millennial kingdom, and they'll repopulate the land there. I believe that's when the Israel is going to possess the land to the fullness of the boundaries given to the Abrahamic covenant. And so a lot's going to go on in this millennial kingdom, right? And so that's what's being described. The Antichrist is going to be defeated. Satan's going to be put in the abyss for 1,000 years, no longer able to tempt anyone. So this is going to be the millennial rule of Christ. This is what Daniel's describing in this vision here, okay? It says, the kingdom, then the kingdom and dominion, verse 27, and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people, the saints of the Most High. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominion shall serve and obey him. Verse 28, this is the end of the account. As for me, Daniel, my thoughts greatly troubled me, and my countenance changed, but I kept the matter in my heart. So this vision, a lot going on. And if we were just to read Daniel chapter 7, it would be very difficult to understand. But when you put together the Olivet Discourse, what Jesus taught there in Matthew 24, 25, 26, right around there, and then when you read the book of Revelation, you can put these things together and you can kind of see how it all unfolds in the latter days just before Jesus returns and when he returns and sets up his millennial rule, okay? All right, we're going to try to tackle chapter 8, another set of visions here, and this one has to do with the Medo-Persian Empire and the Grecian Empire. Okay, so in chapter 8, verse 1 says, in the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar. So notice in chapter 7 was the first year of the King Belshazzar. That's prior to Daniel chapter 5 when Babylon fell. Right? But then chapter 8 is also prior. It's also prior to Daniel chapter 5 when Babylon fell. Okay, so again, this is not in chronological order. It says, in the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar, a vision appeared to me. To me, Daniel, after the one that appeared to me the first time, which would be a reference to what we just read in chapter 7. Verse 2 says, I saw in the vision, and it so happened while I was looking that I was in Shushan, the citadel which is in the province of Elam, and I saw the vision that I was by the river Ulai. Now, Shushan is actually the capital. It will become the capital of Persia right there. Okay, so I want you to note that. He says, I saw in the vision, and it happened while I was looking that I was in Shushan. I don't believe he went there, but I think kind of like when Ezekiel had a vision of the temple in Jerusalem, he was actually in Babylon at that time. I believe that Daniel, he had this vision while in Babylon, but it was actually kind of a vision of Shushan, which would become the capital of Persia. And that's, I think, significant because it begins right here, the vision of the Medo-Persian Empire, okay? And so it says in verse 3, then I lifted my eyes and saw there standing beside the river was a ram which had two horns. Okay, so we're going to see that this ram is symbolic of the Medo-Persian Empire. The Medo and the Persian Empire, two horns, and that's why it's two horns. And the two horns were high, but one was higher than the other, and the higher one came up last. Okay, so when you study the historical account of the Medo-Persian Empire, Persia was stronger was the stronger of the two, right? And so therefore, this vision of the two horns there, right? One is higher than the other. That really does match the Medo-Persian Empire because the Persian Empire was stronger than the Medes. Okay, so verse 4 says, I saw the ram pushing westward northward and southward, so that no animal could withstand him, nor was there any that could deliver from his hand. But he did according to his will and became great. And I was considering, suddenly a male goat came, as I was considering, suddenly a male goat came from the west across the surface of the whole earth without touching the ground, and the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. And then he came to the ram that had two horns, which I had seen standing beside the river, and ran at him with furious power. And I saw him confronting the ram. He was moved with rage against him, attacked the ram, broke his two horns. There was no power in the ram to withstand him, but he cast him down to the ground and trampled him. And there was no one that could deliver the ram from his hand. Verse 8, therefore the male goat grew very great, but when he became strong, the large horn was broken, and in place of it, four notable ones came up toward the four winds of heaven. Now, again, this is going to be explained, this vision to Daniel, by the angel Gabriel, we're going to see. But I'm just going to kind of set this up to you, so as this unfolds, this interpretation, you kind of know what's going on. Okay, so these two animals, right? A vision of a ram and a goat. The ram, as I mentioned, is the Medo-Persian Empire. It has two horns. The higher horn is Persia, and the lower horn there is the Medes, okay? But notice, that world empire was conquered by who? It was conquered by the Grecian Empire, okay? So the Grecian Empire is the goat. And notice how the goat comes in. It says that a male goat came from the west, verse 5, across the surface of the whole earth without touching the ground. And so, you know, in my heart, in my mind, as that goat is coming, he's coming in so fast that he doesn't even touch the ground. And really, when you study how Alexander the Great came in with the Grecian Empire, boy, he just took over everything really quickly. Actually, I believe Alexander the Great, he died when he was 33, but he did all that at such a young age. Okay, so this goat here is the Grecian Empire, which conquers the Medo-Persian Empire. But notice, it has this one horn, this goat, right? And so the one horn is Alexander the Great. Now verse 8 says, but when he became strong, the large horn was broken. So we note this, that Alexander the Great died at a very young age. And what happened? Well, he didn't have any children, and so the kingdom was split within the generals there. And actually, I don't have this memorized, but I have this highlighted in the Bible Knowledge Commentary. Those generals are Ptolemy, Cassander, Lysimachus, and Seleucus. And so they divided that whole Grecian empire with his four generals. And that's what's being referred to when it says, but when he became strong, the large horn was broken. He died, Alexander the Great, and in place of it, four notable ones came up toward the four winds of heaven. This would be the four generals, okay? Now, verse 9, this is going to all be kind of described here in the interpretation that Gabriel gives, okay? So now, verse 9 says, and out of one of them came a little horn, which grew exceedingly great toward the south, toward the east, and toward the glorious land. Now, who is this little horn? Okay, so this little horn would be a man named Antiochus Epiphanes, who comes on the scene right around 168 BC. Okay, so we're going to learn more about him as we get further along here. It says, and it grew up to the host of heaven, and it cast down some of the host and some of the stars to the ground and trampled them. He even exalted himself as high as the prince. Now notice, the prince is capital P of the host. And by him, the daily sacrifices were taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down. Now, I'll just kind of throw this out there so you can kind of take this in as we read the interpretation in a little bit. This man, Antiochus Epiphanes, he came into power toward the latter part of the Grecian Empire. And what he did is that he was a very, very vicious man, and he was against Israel. And so what he did is he desecrated the temple in Israel. And in place of the altar in the temple, that he replaced it with an altar to Zeus, a Greek god. You know, Zeus is the head of the Greek gods. And so he replaced it with that altar. And then he sacrificed a swine, a pig, right there on the altar. And he put a stop to all the different sacrifices that Israel's making. Okay, so he was a very, very ruthless leader there, and he tried to take out Israel, as so often was the history there of on Israel, that he tried to just basically devour Israel. Okay, so this is the one that's being described here in verses 9, 10, and 11, this little horn, which grew exceedingly great toward the south, toward the east, and toward the glorious land, which is a reference, this is in verse 9, to Israel, specifically Jerusalem, specifically in the temple, right? So now, verse 11, let's read. It says, he even exalted himself as high as the prince of the host. He wanted to be like God. And so we read this, and really this does resemble Antichrist in the latter days, which we're going to see referred to later in this vision here, okay? But remember in Revelation, Antichrist, right, he builds an image. He wants to be worshipped as God. And he, just like in the vision in Daniel chapter, when Nebuchadnezzar tried to do in Daniel chapter 3, remember, build an image and have everybody worship him, right? His image, right? That was a type of Antichrist. Well, we know in Revelation there, Antichrist, at the abomination of desolation, he's going to go into the temple, desecrate that temple, and want to be worshipped as God. And so we see Antiochus Epiphanes, he does this, and he's a type of the Antichrist. That's being described right here. Now, note that Daniel's prophesying this before it happens, right? Daniel's living in the time of King Belshazzar, right? The last king before Babylon falls. We had the Medo-Persian Empire after that. Then we have the Grecian Empire. So he's prophesying this, or he has this vision, and then Gabriel's going to give him the interpretation. And this all comes to pass, in historically speaking, in right around 168 BC to 165 BC, when Antiochus Epiphanes, he puts a halt to all the sacrifices in the temple there, and then basically desecrates the temple. Right, and so it says, verse 11 again, he even exalted himself as high as the prince of the host, and by him the daily sacrifices were taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down. Verse 12, now the place of his sanctuary was cast down. We're going to see that Judas Maccabeus, he leads an army that thwarts, that puts a stop to Antiochus Epiphanes, okay? And so we're going to see reference to that. But notice in verse 12, it says, because transgression, an army was given over to the horn to oppose the daily sacrifices, and he cast truth down to the ground. He did all this and prospered. And then I heard a holy one speaking, and another holy one said that certain one who was speaking, how long will the vision be concerning the daily sacrifices and the transgression of desolation, the giving of both the sanctuary and the host to be trampled underfoot? And he said to me, for 2,300 days, then the sanctuary will be cleansed. Okay, so the sanctuary is desecrated for 2,300 days. Right, and then it's going to be cleansed. And how it's going to be cleansed is, as I mentioned, this man, Judas Maccabees, is going to lead an army, and they're going to come in, and they're going to take back the temple, okay? And it's against all kinds of odds. But this is where we see, even today, how the Jewish nation, they celebrate Hanukkah, right? And that's a remembrance of when Judas Maccabees, he came in with his army there, and they took the temple back, and they cleansed the temple. Okay, so all this is a historical account after the fact, but this is prophesied right here in Daniel chapter 8. Okay, it's all about, and it leads us to the end times. This is a type of what Antichrist is going to do at the abomination of desolation. So I want you to note this too. Notice it says in verse 13, and the transgression of desolation, the giving of both the sanctuary and the host to be trampled underfoot. This is a type of the abomination of desolation spoken of in Daniel chapter 9, where Antichrist, okay, so Antiochus Epiphanes, I believe, is a type of Antichrist. It's a precursor to Antichrist doing this in Israel again in the seven-year tribulation, right in the middle there when he desecrates the temple, okay? Now, verse 14, this for 2,300 days, then the sanctuary shall be cleansed. I want to read, this is a commentary by the Bible Knowledge Commentary about this 2300 days, okay? It says, Antiochus's desecration of the temple was to last 2300 evenings and mornings before its cleansing. And that's chapter 8, verse 14, which we just read. Some take the 2300 evenings and mornings to mean 2300 days. That's one interpretation. That is a little more than 6 years. And so they would say 6 years that this happened until Antiochus Epiphanes came in and put a stop to it. Now, in this interpretation, the 6 years were from Antiochus's first incursion into Jerusalem, which is 170 BC, to the refurbishing and restoring of the temple by Judas Maccabeus in late 164. So that's the 6 years. Now, a second interpretation seems preferable. They write, rather than each evening and each morning representing a day, the reference may be to evening and morning sacrifices, which were interrupted by Antiochus's desecration of the day, or that is the daily sacrifice in verses 11 through 21. With two sacrifices made daily, the 2300 offerings would cover 1150 days or 3 years, which using a 360-day calendar year plus 70 days. Now, this is the time from Antiochus's desecration of the temple, December 16th, 167 BC, to the refurbishing and restoring of the temple by Judas Maccabeus in late 164 and on into 163 BC. So that's where they get the 3 years, okay? It says, when all Jewish sacrifices were fully restored and religious independence gained for Judah. Whichever interpretation it is, that one accepts the figure of 2300 was a literal one, and so the time period was literally fulfilled. So what are they referencing? What's their point here? Well, the 2300 days or offerings, whether it's 2300 days or they're looking at half of that because there's a morning and evening offering, that this literally comes to pass by the different dates that they start counting from. Okay, so one is when Antiochus Epiphanes first incursion into Jerusalem in 170 BC, or you use the start date when Antiochus's desecration of the temple 3 years later. Okay, so that's what their point is. Whether you think the 2300 is 2300 literal days, or it's only half of those days because it's referencing that many sacrifices, two sacrifices in a day, there's dates that correspond to that to fulfill this number 2300, however you want to use it. Okay, so that's the point that the Bible Knowledge Commentary is making. What they're saying is that this literally was fulfilled, right? This prophecy, because Daniel is getting this vision way before the Grecian Empire comes into play here, right? And so this 2300 is literally fulfilled, no matter which way you interpret the 2300 days or half of that, okay? Now, verse 15, it says, then it happened, when I, Daniel, had seen the vision and was seeking the meaning, that suddenly there stood before me one having the appearance of a man. And I heard a man's voice between the banks of Ulai, who called and said, Gabriel, make this man understand the vision. So this would be the angel Gabriel, right? So what Daniel, he has this vision, right, of the ram and the goat, right? And so he asks this man that he sees, and he says, what does this mean? And so Gabriel, this man's voice says to Gabriel, go ahead and give him the interpretation of this dream. Now this man's voice could be another angel, could be the Lord himself, but he asked Gabriel to give Daniel the interpretation. Okay, so verse 17 says, so he came near where I stood, and when he came, I was afraid and fell on my face. But he said to me, understand, son of man, that the vision refers to the time of the end. Okay, so now, this now takes us to the time of Antichrist, I believe. Okay, so when we read all this account prior to this, right, we can kind of start to see how it's speaking of Antiochus Epiphanes, right? This 2,300 days, and this whole thing about the desolation, right, and the stopping of the sacrifices, we see in verse 11, and by him the daily sacrifices were taken away, and the place of the sanctuary was cast down. And so we see references here in chapter 8 where Antiochus Epiphanes fulfills that. But right here it says, now the vision also pertains to the time of the end. And so this is where I believe Antiochus Epiphanes is not the fulfillment, ultimate fulfillment of this. It's a type of the fulfillment of Antichrist when he comes into the temple and in the midway of the tribulation. And that's known as the abomination of desolation. Okay, so this is, I think, significant when he says the vision refers to the time of the end. This takes us to the end times, which is future from us, when right before Jesus returns. It says, now as he was speaking with me, I was in a deep sleep with my face to the ground. But he touched me and stood me upright. And he said, look, I am making known to you what shall happen in the latter time of the indignation. For at the appointed time, the end shall be. I believe there's a reference to the tribulation, the latter time. Okay, now, it says verse 20, the ram which you saw, having the two horns, they are the kings of Media and Persia. And the male goat is the kingdom of Greece. The large horn that is between its eyes is the first king. This would be what? Alexander the Great. Okay. Now verse 22. As for the broken horn and the four that stood up in its place, four kingdoms shall arise out of that nation, but not with its power. So these are the four generals that came to power after Alexander the Great died. That's that horn that was broken, okay? So this is referring to the historical fulfillment of this prophecy of the Medo-Persian Empire. He spells it out, and the Grecian Empire spells it out. Now, verse 23 says, and in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressions have reached their fullness, a king shall arise, having fierce features, who understands sinister schemes. His power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. He shall destroy fearfully and shall prosper and thrive. He shall destroy the mighty and also the holy people. Now, I believe in verses 23 and 24, this is a reference to Antiochus Epiphanes. Okay, so we see, right? He explains the Medo-Persian Empire, right? That's the ram. And then he explains that the other beast, the goat, is the Grecian Empire with Alexander the Great as its king. And then when he dies, his four generals take over. And then in verses 23 and 24, it speaks, I believe, of Antiochus Epiphanes, especially when it says, he shall destroy the mighty and also the holy people. I believe it's referring to Israel, to the Jews there. Now, in verse 25, I believe it starts to now start to talk about the latter days in the tribulation, which would be when Antichrist comes on the scene. So it's, through his cunning he shall cause deceit to prosper under his rule, and he shall exalt himself in his heart. He shall destroy many in their prosperity. He shall even rise against the prince of princes. Now notice the prince is capitalized because they're interpreting that for you. I believe this is a reference to Jesus. He shall even rise against the prince of princes, but he shall be broken without human means. Now, remember, we just studied this when Jesus returns, right? At the Battle of Armageddon, there he returns. What happens? He takes out all those that are amassed in the Valley of Megiddo. He basically takes out Antichrist there and the false prophet. And so he shall even rise against the prince of princes. Antichrist, he amasses that army outside of Jerusalem because he's trying to thwart Jesus's return. And so I believe that this starts to now dovetail into the latter days about Antichrist. Okay, so it goes from Epiphanes, Antiochus Epiphanes, to Antichrist himself. And that's what we read right here in chapter 8, verses 25 and 26. Now it says, and the vision of the evenings and mornings, which was told, is true. Therefore, seal up the vision, for it refers to many days in the future. Not only in the future of Antiochus Epiphanes, but I believe it's many days in the future to the time of Antichrist. Now, verse 27 says, I And I, Daniel, fainted and was sick 4 days. Afterward, I rose and went about the king's business. I was astonished by the vision, but no one understood it. So, two radical visions, chapter 7 and chapter 8. It speaks to latter days, end times, the times just before Jesus returns. But it gives us a lot of historical backdrop, too, of all the different world empires, right, that lead up to that. Now, remember this, as I mentioned, in Revelation chapter 17 and 18, it's really judgment, details on the judgment of this world. Spiritual Babylon, which is the spiritual behind all the darkness of this world. Remember the woman that rides the beast? The beast, I believe, is Antichrist and his power there and his government. The woman is symbolic of religious Babylon, and that's what's fueling the world, right? Is the darkness in spiritual Babylon, the spiritual darkness behind the world. But then in Revelation 18, there's judgment on economic and physical Babylon, and we see that judgment in detail in Revelation 18. And so I believe when we read this vision here of these world empires, right, they're all leading up to when Jesus returns, right, when the Ancient of Days returns. But when Jesus returns, what precedes that is judgment on this world. And that's what we see in Revelation. Remember, we notice in Revelation that it goes from judgment to glory. Right? Revelation 19, right? The culmination of judgment at the Battle of Armageddon, but then the glory in the millennial kingdom. And so that's what we're reading in these prophecies here. All these world empires, they're going to be judged. They're going to come to an end. And then it's the Lord's kingdom that's going to reign. And that's what we see here in chapters 7 and 8 in these visions. Okay? All right, so next week in Daniel chapter 9, we're going to see a fascinating prophecy of the 7-year tribulation, the last 7 years before Jesus returns in the 77s, okay? And then in chapter 10, we're going to see also another vision, and this is going to be both in chapter 9 and chapter 10, they're going to be visions during the time of the Medo-Persian Empire. As I mentioned, Daniel, he spans the two kingdoms there, and he is the one that's used to interpret dreams and visions throughout these two kingdoms, the Babylonian kingdom and also the Medo-Persian kingdom. Okay, so we'll cover that next week. Okay, let's go and pray. Lord, I just want to thank you for this time in your word. I pray that you give us understanding. You help us to be able to connect the dots of scripture, Lord, from these visions and dreams of Daniel, that we can connect them to the vision that John had in Revelation. And Lord, it really does start to connect, Lord. The dots begin to connect. But help us even more to understand, Lord, with our hearts, Lord, to know that these things will come to pass and that they would affect, as we understand these things, they would affect us how we live in the here and now, Lord. Your word is complete. Your word is true. Your word will come to pass. And knowing this, Lord, just that question, what manner of persons ought we to be in holy conduct, in godliness? Lord, I go back and I think back to that passage in Romans chapter 12, becoming a living, offering our bodies as living sacrifices. After you've done all these things, after your word is accomplished, all these things in our lives, Lord, what manner of person ought we to be? We should be offering our bodies as living sacrifices, wholly acceptable and pleasing unto you. That's our reasonable service. And so, Lord, I pray, Lord, as we take in these scriptures of prophecy on Wednesday evening in the book of Daniel and also in Revelation on Sunday morning, help us to understand these things so that they would change us, that they would affect our lives today. I ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen. One more point I forgot to mention, this whole part about Antiochus Epiphanes and then also Antichrist. Remember when we studied in the book of Isaiah, the near and the far term prophecies being fulfilled? Well, that's kind of an example of that. We have a near term in Antiochus Epiphanes, that prophecy is fulfilled, but then also we have the far term that's fulfilled in the time of the tribulation. Okay, so I just forgot to mention that, wanted to mention that. But God bless you, and we'll see you on Sunday morning.